Basic Bananas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to Basic Bananas Radio. Today, I have a very special guest on the call. Dom, are you there?
Yes, I am, Christian, and how are you?
I'm very, very good. Thank you Excellent. So much for taking the time to be on the show.
It's a pleasure.
And, of course, sharing with our listeners. Now, for the listeners, I recently met Dom at Melbourne Fashion Week. We were both presenting at part of Fashion Week. Well, I wasn't presenting on the latest fashion insights because I have no idea. I was presenting on marketing to the audience, to a whole bunch of fashion. We had about 200 businesses, didn't we, through the room, Dom? And they were all people aspiring to build fashion businesses or already with fashion industry businesses. So Dom is the man that has that experience in the fashion industry, and he's the fashion guru. I'm definitely not.
See the build-up.
Yeah. But basically, Dom shared his story at Fashion Week. We were both presenters, and it was a really cool story, inspirational story. He's one of these guys that's kind of gone from the garage and built a successful business. So I thought it'd be really beneficial to share some of that info with our listeners. And of course, the business wisdom that you have built up over the years would definitely be beneficial to everyone on the call. Maybe to get started, Dom, could you share what your business looks like now, just so we know who we got on the line and kind of what it is, you know, what's it look like? And that would be
sure.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
Sure, and we can work backwards.
Perfect.
Okay, so currently, so this is our 32nd year of being in the fashion business, and primarily in the men's side of the business. We did in the early days have a ladies component for a few years in the late 80s. So today we're looking at a business that goes across Australia nationally and New Zealand at a wholesale level into sort of independent stores, plus our key component of the business, our Myer store-in-store business, where we physically have a boutique presence within the key locations around the country, of which I'm actually in the process of going around the country now promoting the latest brand new fit outs for those locations, and they're in about 16 locations. So we're in a great department store. We've got excellent presence at the premium end of the men's clothing business, tailored orientated, of course, and we do casual, but they're more smart casual looks. That's an evolving thing that's happened over the last 32 years.
Awesome. I can imagine that's kind of like the jewel in the crown, like for any fashion designer or fashion business to get into a store chain like Myer.
It is these days, Krista, because as you can see in all business areas, these days the speed of change is astronomical. It's nothing like it was in the early days. Not only for myself, but for yourself and anyone who started the business at any stage, the speed of change in recent years has been really breathtaking. It's exciting at the same time, but it really is, challenges are new. So. But for us, for example, in the early days, the landscape was really about independent stores, about selling to other, what we call multi-brand stores. And then that changed into the importance of department stores, where the department store model changed, where they were more of a general appeal as opposed to a focused one. And yes, absolutely, it is a jewel in a marketing mix to have a department store component, especially now, because, which, Myer's, this is our 22nd year, I think, at Myer. So we've had a wonderful relationship. Wow. So we kind of really built up together, really, and that's been really fruitful and still is. The attitude is that everyone works together in achieving the common goal. So yes, it's been a great outcome for us, and we're looking at positive things going forward, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine. Super cool. Now, so let's fill in the gaps again. So you're saying back in the day, it was a bit different. Tell us, you did a really good story of summing up your journey at Fashion Week. So could you give us the kind of highlights of that? Of
Sure.
Because sure, everyone, we'll do. You know, there's people have different experience and different things that happen, and I think it would resonate with a lot of our listeners as well. That would be
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll do. Thank you. I mean, I will give an edited version because it is a lengthy story, only because my path started when I was 9. So so let's fast
here
forward.
Here we go. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't go that far back. But really, why it's important to mention that is for some key things that I love people to take away when they hear any story is you know, key things like, you know, luck. In this case, you know, I was lucky to know from a young age what I wanted to do with my life, whilst I wasn't clear exactly what I, you know, where I was going with the career path. And in the early days, it was all about tailoring, and then the whole design world became more obvious to me as I got older, and I was 16, and then fell in love with the whole thing of design. And for, you know, for a kid for in the country, all of this is kind of really fantasy. And even when I voiced it as a kid, it sounded really like a fantasy land. But it was a dream. It was a dream of mine that I had as a young boy to pursue this career whilst I didn't know exactly what I was going into. And then when I came to Melbourne, I pursued it as a design dream. But unfortunately, in those days, unlike today, there wasn't the schools, there wasn't the education, there wasn't online, there wasn't Google, there wasn't all of the wonderful tools that one has today to do some homework and research and learn more. So I had to really kind of find a way of learning some additional skills. I was kind of comfortable with my tailoring skills because I had learned that from my godfather back in Tashuro, which is the Goulburn Valley district. Awesome. in Victoria. So I was actually comfortable with that sort of, but I just knew that I had to learn other facets of the business. So I started looking at all different types of schools and technically just formulating a course of myself, doing night school drawing, doing day school fabric design, doing afternoons, the pattern making. So I kind of built a little bit of a course for myself, so to speak, and pursued that whilst I was working as a trainee supervisor at a clothing company at the time. I then, I think in my late teens, took up a position as a pattern maker at the government clothing factory, which was a wonderful period for me because of the specification approach of developing patterns. It was so you know, specific and so accurate. It set me up for you know, really become quite a good pattern maker, which I then took on that role into other clothing companies when I took on design positions in these companies as a pattern maker come designer. So by this stage, I'm in my early 20s, and 1984, I decided to go out and start, you know, my own business and my own label. And it wasn't driven by money, Christo. It wasn't even driven by, you know, some of these lovely romantic things you hear. I just really wanted to see if I could do it. And I, you know, I was doing quite well. I put at risk. I didn't know what I was doing. I absolutely had no idea what I was doing other than I just wanted to start my own label. So, naivety is a wonderful thing when you're young, when you don't know what you're doing. It's actually pretty good. But of course I developed this obsession to do this by this stage. And, we just took the plunge. I started from home. I know it's cliche, but it's a fact. I started from home in the garage, which honestly we had just recently moved in. And I'm not joking. I don't think the cars were in the garage at once. So from day one, we just turned it into a little bit of a factory finishing area, pattern making area. So we started from there. Anyway, that grew into a factory in late sort of mid to late 80s, and then we started a new business model where it was part licensing and part joint venture. So we started down that track, and that got into the late 80s, early 90s. We opened our first boutique in Bourke Street, Melbourne, which was a tailoring house come boutique, which is right up my alley, of course. It was during the recession. Sorry, it was at the start of the recession. It was horrendous. We were absolutely hammered during that period. The only reason we survived is that my wife and I had no idea really what we're doing at retail. But because we were kind of love working with people, we gave amazing customer service. We had our tailoring business, which is my background. So we just zoned in on making custom-made clothing for what was still left of the wealthy people of the time, and we got through it. And then 1995, we signed up a licensing deal that took us into New Zealand and back into Australia, and we're still in that structure currently as we speak. And then Maya came on board in, I think it was 94, something like that. So I mean, everyone has a story. As I think I mentioned to Christo, like, everyone has a story. The only difference for me is that I get a chance to tell it. But I must say, when I do tell it, I do things that come to my mind is how obsessive I was, how blind I was of knowledge, and how committed I was to an outcome, which are valuable things to have when you're pursuing any business career. However, having said that, these days, as I was chatting at the talk, the only component I share with a lot now, which is kind of not what a lot of people share, that is that when you do plan to start a business or take these enormous risks, as you do, unlike what I did, is I encourage people now to, when they do their costings in terms of starting a business, you know, the cost of rent and wages and all the fundamentals, the additional sheet right alongside it should be your personal cost, because there is a personal cost. And without sounding negative, because I'm definitely not, it's a cost sheet that should be written up at the same time, because it gives you clarity of what the worst case scenarios could be, and if they do go down the worst case scenario, are you prepared to make those personal losses? And that particular exercise has become a very powerful tool for me. I must say it's a bar of a tool, because it prevents me from taking some probably risks that I would have taken when I was younger.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure you're in the same situation. You get some great opportunities, but now that I've adopted that approach, it does challenge me, because unless those things line up, yes, you could be successful maybe in your business venture, but you'll fail in your personal one, and it's not going to celebrating on your own is not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you mentioned at Fashion Week, one of the lines that said that you stuck with me, you said, you know, about the whole obsession thing. I remember you said something along the lines of, you know, I'm surprised my family even stuck with me.
Well, I still am, to be honest, because this is a calculation we don't make, and you know, honestly, anyone who's in business and still has their family support is lucky, because you're giving up so much of your time. Like, I was traveling at one stage for not every week consecutively, but if you took it over a year, I'd be away 6 months of the year.
Yeah.
So my wife had to be mum and dad at the same time. Mm. So she, you know, if I didn't have the enormous support of my wife and my family, I wouldn't be laughing about it. It wouldn't be funny.
But
that's why I share it now, because I really believe that to get that balance between the business obsession and your family commitments is crucial, because I've been very lucky. I've had some lovely milestones in my life. And once you go past those, you've still got to have this personal side that's got to be, very, very fundamentally sound for you to be able to go forward. So that's why I don't want to get sort of too sentimental about it, but I think it's such an important thing when you're building business decisions.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a very good point. That's why I wanted to bring this as a kind of a key point on the show today. You mentioned that personal cost sheet, and I think one thing we actually did, and I'm not trying to say that I'm amazing over here, is one thing we did with Basic Bananas anyway, which is the main business I'm known for, and it's we did structure it around having flexibility in our life, and you know, because Francisca, my wife, is Swiss, so we want to go over to Switzerland, you know, I'd never want her have to feel like she's missed out on, you know, connecting with her mother or anything like that, you know, because she's stuck here and can't go because she's got, you know, 4 weeks holidays a year or something like that. My background, I actually used to be a professional surfer, and I had a lot of freedom and flexibility and travel time, and I wanted to keep that as well, so I don't kind of end up this, you know, down on life guy. And so we did structure it around our own lifestyle of things what we wanted to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. However, a lot of, well, most businesses that we work with, it's always the other way around. It's always, let's get more and more success, like pile it on, without actually, you know, exactly doing what you're saying here, without actually even considering.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, which is fine. The attitude should be, by all means, pursue the dreams. Absolutely. But just take your family on the same trip.
Yes.
You know, I'm really lucky at the moment because my son joined our business 6 years ago as brand manager and creative director. So I'm really lucky to have him on board now. I get to share new experiences with him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And my daughter, who's in the clothing industry as well, I think I mentioned to you, she just recently opened her own boutique. And in the early days, she was also involved. So I kind of made up for some of those areas in the early days. So I've been really lucky to have them all around me, and whilst we got all our own individual things, this is something we share a lot together. But even if they weren't, I still encourage that anyone who's going down their path is just to take it all, everyone on the same trip, because it gets lonely otherwise.
Yeah.
Very lonely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my little. I had a situation a few years ago. A young guy comes in and says, "Dom, I plan to start a business. Can you give me some advice?" And I flippantly said, "Just plan to lose your partner and your family." It was my first comment. and he turned around and said, "What?" And I said, I'm sounding a bit dramatic, but you know, I was trying to make a point of what I'm just saying.
There's going to be commitment. Yeah, I have people, a trigger point actually lately, I have people saying to me, because our latest book hit the bestseller list in, we got number one on the bestseller in March.
By the way, congratulations. I've really enjoyed reading it.
It's been excellent.
Awesome.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much. And
it's awesome.
It's been a real trigger point because we got like this number one in UK, USA, Australia. And so people are asking us all the time now, you know, what did you do? What's the big secret to make it work? And my answer is, well, it's about 14 years of being obsessed with marketing. You know, I haven't watched TV in probably 14 years. That's the honest truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a sacrifice to me, but that's, you know, like I don't feel like I've missed out on life. But obviously there are things we've got to sacrifice. So it's a really good...
Well, given what I've seen of your board meetings, that attitude is brilliant.
Thank you very much. Yes, we do have a good. If the listeners
I get excited. I was really excited to have that experience with you and everyone else that day because, as I mentioned to you at the time, everyone in that room were just so fortunate to be able to have access to people that could just ask questions or continue to ask questions. I think it's an incredible, valuable thing that people have the opportunity to do. And you gave a great line at the end of your presentation where you essentially said, I can't remember exact words, but essentially is to learn from the people who've done it.
Yeah, exactly. Learn from people who've already.
Don't try and
it out.
Reinvent the wheel. Just learn from people that have done it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's very valuable.
Yeah, exactly. Someone's already mapped the path, haven't they? So just find the map.
Well,
the most.
Yeah,
of it.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Now let's. Can I dig around a little bit? Just share a few insights around because a business like yours, I imagine a lot of listeners and lots of different businesses, they have to kind of continually innovate. Like how do you, because I just comes to mind for me, I look at a business like your, like my business, your marketing, we're always looking for the latest and greatest and we are innovating in things. And in previous businesses I've had, I had a surfboard manufacturing business for a while and we would just look to ways to make them stronger. We didn't have to reinvent a new line, you know, for each season or something like that. How do you go about this, Dom? Like what's the, you know, I imagine a fashion because it moves, the trends change. Maybe it's the, you know, a shirt's still a shirt, but it's got to be like a new pattern or a new cut or I guess is this, I suppose that's...
Yeah, I mean, I guess in our case, we're forced to change, which we're forced to technically reinvent ourselves every time. We joke about it and it's an old saying, I know, but we're only as good as our next collection. It doesn't matter how good our previous collection has been or was, it's the next one you get judged on. So I must admit, I find it still very exciting and challenging because of that, you know, task ahead of us, because you are having to technically predict a year ahead. We work a year ahead, for example.
Yeah.
So we have to technically, you know, predict what we think is going to work within 12 months. And, you know, in our case, we obviously have, you know, a marketplace that we work on, so we can draw from that. We have obviously years of doing what we're doing. So we have a lot of fundamental areas that we draw on. And then, of course, you've got the future trends that are evolving. Although the speed of trend change is incredibly fast now with social media, internets, and, you know, all the other stuff that is instant around the world, the speed is really quite, you know, mind-blowing. But at the same time, it's exciting. But I guess, to answer your question another way, I think from our point of view is that we operate to our brand. Mm. We operate, this is who we are. This is who we are in the marketplace. And we appeal to, obviously, a particular type of customer. So we kind of stay within that realm. We don't obviously try to be all things to all people because we can't.
Yep.
And obviously with that attitude, we kind of hope there's enough people out there to keep buying, you know, the things, the looks and the things that we do. So I guess in a nutshell, that's the only answer I can give you, is that we just, whilst we take all of this, you know, wonderful information around us on board, at the end of the day, we want to make sure we're always producing the Don Bagnato look, which is an Italian style, you know, influence collection for the consumer. Mm. That's what we do. So in that case, you know, we're a little, again, a bit lucky because we're using Italian fabrics, and our heritage is Italian. Our whole DNA is Italian, and we kind of get it in a true and authentic level. So we try and stay within that, if that makes sense. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, you know, definitely. It's an interesting one for me, and I think for a lot of the listeners, just hearing that you're a year ahead, always thinking of the next line. And I like the fact that I think that's pretty much the summary, is that you keep it within your brand guidelines and your own style, and exactly, not trying to be everything to everyone. Otherwise, I'm sure you'd lose your brand essence. You know, you'd lose your position. Or at least risk it, you know, by trying to do too much. It's like, this is part of marketing. We do pretty much every day I'm working with businesses.
Exactly.
Find their spot, you know.
I must say, Krista, and I'm sure you find the same thing with all the brands that you're working with, trying to differentiate oneself from another brand is obviously harder than ever. Mm. Because of the amount of, in our case, especially the amount of options that the consumer has, it is really difficult, and we don't, and it's so easy to kid yourself about as well. But I just think there's certain areas of one brand that you just can't afford to give up.
Mm, yeah. I guess for a business like yours, the brand, well, every business is a brand is extremely important. But imagine like first impressions with a brand like yours, and even your own personal image, like for the listeners, Dom looked good at Fashion Week.
Basic bananas.